North London forever, no matter the weather. If you thought I was going to be unbearable, you're right, because Arsenal are absolute champions of the world, baby.
Wow, the world.
Oh, also, we talked to Zoran Mamdani, the mayor of this city. Also an Arsenal fan. Wait to hear his thoughts on that. Plus, he's got some really cool stuff lined up for 1,000 New Yorkers are going to get a chance to go to the World Cup for a reasonable number, which is absolutely incredible. Thank you, Zoran Mamdani, for that. What else we got, Christian?
And we're also joined by Stu Holden, one of the announcers for the World Cup on Fox. So we're going to be talking to him and looking forward to an incredible tournament and what it's like from the broadcaster, the announcer's perspective. And some World Cup dark horses. We're getting closer and closer to the tournament. Some of these teams have injuries. A lot of things, a lot of changes coming up. But we're going to talk about who could surprise us at the World Cup. So all this and more.
And Hathaway's on. No, I'm making that part up.
All this and more today on the Cooligans.
We're going to talk about it when the show starts. Obviously, Arsenal won. It's incredible. Not the way I would want it, right? I would have loved if it happened on the pitch. But I was watching. I had to watch Bournemouth, Manchester City. And you had texted me like, yo, make sure you do like a reaction.
Yeah.
Dude, I had the camera out. I had the camera on a tripod. I was so ready to go. I was fully dressed up in Arsenal. And I thought to myself, this is going to look really stupid if City wins this game, right?
Right, right.
But the moment it happens, I start getting texts from a lot of people congratulating me. But one in particular was like, yo, let's go to Fancy Free right now. Right? We don't live in London. We can't go to the Emirates.
Exactly, exactly.
But Fancy Free, shouts to the Brooklyn Invincibles. I don't know if any of them are listening, but that's the moment, right? That's the moment where you could celebrate. This is the spot where you could celebrate with all your friends, all the other gooners, right? And I thought, you know what? Nah. My wife been with me through this whole journey. I kind of want to celebrate with her. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right? She always was like, yo, I don't want to get involved in football.
She kind of hates the sport a little
bit. Yeah, no, she doesn't hate the sport. But she's like, if I start to like it, that's like everything you do and I do is all meshed. This is your thing and astrology and all that stuff is her thing.
You don't want to step in that world?
You know what? I'm like, just tell me why I'm amazing as a tourist. I don't need to know the rest of it. But like, I don't get too heavily involved in that, so we can have our own thing.
Sure.
But she's been with me literally since the last time. I mean, since before the last time Arsenal won, we've been together. So
yeah, what year did you meet?
I'm not going to say that on camera. It's ridiculous. But in high school, just after high school.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. Which was 2017. I just look like shit. Yeah. But what you would call it? Long story short, she's been
more than 22 years ago. Obviously.
Yeah. More than 22 years ago. Again, I'm 25. So we met when we were very young. But like, long story short, she's been with me on that. So I said, you know what? Y'all go party. I'm going to wait till baby girl gets home.
Mm.
Right. And then I call wifey. And she's like, oh my God, babe, you did it, blah, blah, blah. I did it. Like, I didn't do shit. But I'm like, how awesome. And she goes, where are you right now? I said, girl, I'm home. You tell me when you get here, we're going out. She's like, yo, I'm in Jersey. She had to go visit her mother. She's like, yo, I'm in Jersey, but when I come back, we're going to do it. So it's 9 o'clock now. And she calls me. She's like, hey, I'm stuck in traffic. And I got to be honest with you, I'm tired.
Mm.
And I was like, bro, I haven't even eaten nothing, blah, blah. We ain't got food. And I was like, come on. We got to go out, even if it's just go get a glass of champagne. So I got to celebrate.
Yeah.
And she's like, I mean, you go if you want, but I'm kind of tired. Yeah, I'm really not hungry. I ate already. I'm like, what the hell is this? You know what I mean? Okay. I literally been sitting here all day.
I mean, this is a deep betrayal. I don't even know.
One of the deepest betrayals. So I'm thinking to myself like, you know, and mind you, I know I didn't play for the team, but I feel like I earned it. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Anytime somebody said congratulations, I said thank you. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Thank you for giving me that. So I thought maybe there's a little wifey surprise. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
How about this? I start making rice. So I'm like, I'm going to heat some food up or whatever. I guess I got to eat. She calls me and she's like, what are you doing? I said, I'm making rice. She's like, oh, stop. I actually brought you. I got food before. You could have it. I was like, what is it? She's like, it's a chicken Caesar wrap. I was like, all right. Love a Caesar wrap, right? But I'm like, what of a random object? How long has it been in your bag? Honestly, I don't care. I don't care. Gotcha. I'm going to eat it. So she comes home and she's like, did you cook? And I said, no, I'm waiting. She's like, I was bullshit. Let's go.
Wow. Okay. But I was like, what? Where's the story going?
It was a joke. So we could go out. She was like, I'm bullshit. Let's go. She's like, you think we wouldn't go celebrate?
Wow.
So guess what we did?
What'd you do?
Nothing. I got massive diarrhea right at that moment. I swear on my mother. I'm like, what?
But there was no Caesar wrap.
Buddy, there was a Caesar wrap, actually. Okay, but it was hers for work tomorrow.
I didn't realize that. I thought that was the joke.
Let go of the Caesar wrap, dude.
I just can't get back. Where's the Caesar wrap?
Honestly, the Caesar wrap alone in my fridge. So sad.
Why did the Caesar wrap lose their mother?
Think about this. She's like, let's go get champagne. Let's go out.
Right.
You pick wherever you want to go. And I'm like, oh my God, right? I'm like shutting off the rice cooker. I'm like, this is insane. I believed her, bro. I put my pants on and I'm like, oh, let me pull up where to go. So I'm looking through my list and my stomach goes, and I was like, nah.
This is
not at this moment.
I'll be honest. Diarrhea is the main character in your life.
Can
bro.
I tell you what happened?
That is.
Can I just say something?
It literally governs all your decisions.
First of all, it should govern everybody's decisions, because when the moment comes, you can't really dictate what happens.
Right, right.
But I was like, what the hell happened? So you know what happened? You know how I celebrated Arsenal winning?
How?
I sat on the couch in my underwear eating a chicken Caesar wrap, dog.
What the hell? That was going to be on the toilet.
No, I mean, there was a part. But I was so hungry after that. I was like, gotcha. I really wish. And then it was like, by the time D got home and it was all done, it was like 10:45. It was like too late to just go out.
Always goes back to two episodes ago, three episodes ago, you're like, you're not farting. You're not doing all this stuff.
By the way, I spoke to wifey about that.
And it's literally.
I betrayed her friendship.
But it's just the amount of digestive issues and problems that govern your life.
I don't think it's problems.
And you're like, Christian, you're the weird one for not farting all day.
I can't believe you don't have to fart. I can't believe you don't fart in front of your lady.
That's called jealousy, bro.
No, that's insane. I'm so worried about you, bro.
My guts are doing fine,
bro.
Look,
okay, whether it's in the Patreon or whether it's just tweet at us, how often do you fart in front of your significant other? Because I'm telling you, you are missing out on I don't think you've consummated the marriage yet. I know you guys have a child, but to me, you guys have not consummated until you're in front of each other.
Who's the father of this child?
Mateo farted in front of you. I have the same respect.
Yeah, yes. I picked many a poop up of my son. Anyway.
So anyway, that's how I celebrated Arsenal winning the title for the first time in 25 years. Well, 22 years.
Congratulations to you. All right, everybody. Welcome to the Cooligans, folks. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
Yeah, somebody's happy that Arsenal won the league.
No blinding forever.
Yes.
No matter the weather.
We are doing this.
These streets are
all right, I'm just gonna let you keep going. we're in the middle of Essex. I don't know where we are.
We should change it to North Brooklyn forever, because that's where I'm living. You know
what I mean? Let's go. Not only we're celebrating. We're giving Arsenal their flowers for winning the Premier League on an incredibly hot show, because not only is Alexis going to be rubbing in everyone's face that 100%. Arsenal did win, but alongside Alexis, we have Mayor Zoran Mamdani doing the same exact thing.
We had to talk to another Arsenal fan.
we said, you know what? There's not enough Arsenal arrogance right now. Yeah. So Mayor Zoran Mamdani, we just sat down with him a couple minutes ago.
Yeah, baby.
And we'll get to that in a little bit. But on top of that, we're also going to be joined by Stu Holden to get ready for this World Cup. And we're going to be talking about a little World Cup Dark Horse segment to wrap up the show. But let's start with the Gooners themselves.
That's right. That was me after the victory. Arsenal are Premier League champions. I've waited 22 years to say those words again. Now, you said, and I kind of agreed with you at the time, that if Arsenal were to lose against Manchester City, that it was a wrap for the league. And I was worried that that was true. How you feeling now?
This is the top topic.
Yes, I was wrong about Arsenal. Mm. I honestly thought if they lost to City at the for the FA Cup, that's when I thought like that would just affect them psychologically. It would just feel like, you know, City's nipping at their heels.
Well, when the quadruple started falling apart, that's when I started being like, can they get at least one of these next two over the line?
Right, right. And it's cool to see, honestly, just cool to see somebody besides City winning it. So that part
isn't that the most important
that's
part?
Really,
and we'll talk about that, because I think that is kind of an important thing.
Right. But overall, you know, when City wins the league, it's like we've gotten so used to it, we've gotten accustomed to it. There's not this, like, you know, outside of the five or six Man City fans that I know personally, I don't really see many people talking about it around me in New York.
Other than, and then when you meet Oasis, I think you've met them all.
I mean, it's, yeah, it's,
I think that's every Man City fan.
It's Yusuf from NYCFC Forever. Yeah. But so we have friends that are obviously, you know, a couple of Manchester City fans, but it's not. I mean, there is an abundance. There is just a litany of Arsenal fans all over this city, all over the country. Everywhere we go, I mean, you know, we've got to so many like Everton versus Arsenal kind of friendlies and stuff like that. And it's comparable. I mean, it's not Real Madrid. It's not to the same level of Real Madrid, but it is.
Think about that, though. Think about that sentence.
I'm just saying,
I think it's almost comparable in the U.S.
From Premier League teams, as far as Premier League teams, there's fewer teams that have that amount of support. I mean, United. It might be neck and neck, United and Arsenal. I mean, we've hosted the fan fest. We see the fans that are the most locked in and show up to those events. So that's where I kind of generally gauge like how popular kind of a team is.
Especially in America. I think it would maybe shock people from other countries to know that United and Arsenal fan base wise are pretty neck and neck. Right. The difference being that Arsenal consistently comes out here and Manchester United doesn't. So I think it's grown even bigger. So I think it's become a thing. But when the victory happened, there was a moment where I almost didn't even believe it was true. Like, I was watching this guy's sports feed. I'm not going to explain how. And I was waiting.
On Twitter.
Yeah, 100%. That's how. Of course.
Clips.
I totally knew that's how that happened. I was waiting to see when it would say, like, Arsenal are Premier League champions. Because it just didn't feel real. I know the whistle blew, and this is just me. I'm like, until the ref is in his car or her car driving home, I'm like, none of this is real. You know what I mean? They could come back and go, wait, VAR says no. So I was so worried. Shouts to, you know, Junior Kroupy, my guy. All right. Thank you so much. We got the stat from Up to Joe here. Across England's top four tiers in 25-26, the side in each division who scored the most goals via set pieces went on to win the title. So that's Arsenal in the Premier League, Coventry City in the Championship, Lincoln City in League One, and Bromley in League Two. So not just us.
All I know, I think we're going to be seeing this for the next couple of years.
Which I said this many years ago when we started. It's like, I think American sports is really, NFL in particular, is really good at this. It's like, how do we use every opportunity that we have the possession to win the game, to make an advancement on winning the game? And in, I think we saw Liverpool do it well when they went out and got a set-piece coach or a throw-in coach. They scored more goals from throw-ins than anyone else. So it's like, why would you not look at every opportunity in the game? And then it was like, the game's gone. People have always scored on set-pieces. So that's the hope every time.
I will say, I do think it's annoying complaining about that, especially for Arsenal, who three second-place finishes in a row. Like, if you keep doing the same exact thing and keep finishing second, you would think do whatever it takes to win. And I've been one of those people that have been like, there were some games this season for Arsenal that were truly unwatchable. For like, if I'm not a fan of either team, I'm like, the entertainment value of this product right now is abysmal. I did not like it, but objectively and from a kind of big picture perspective, I understand what Arsenal are trying to do. These games that are like hella boring are going to be part of the season sometimes. You know, your players.
Part of winning a championship is being able to grind out the games when you're not playing at your best.
Sure.
And if you could turn those into 3 points, thank you, Arteta. That's what it takes to win.
I mean, we're going to see, you know, obviously the Champions League final is coming up. Look who they're playing against, right? A team that is not
right.
That. Is
and
not.
In fact, I would say the most exciting match of the season was PSG versus Liverpool. So PSG clearly have the ability to score a bunch of goals. They also have the ability to leak a bunch of goals. So,
right. Liverpool, you mean Bayern.
I'm sorry, Bayern. Jesus, I was thinking red. Yeah. Versus Bayern. But that's my point, right? I think Arsenal can very clearly score against PSG. Can they stop PSG from scoring, which is going to be tough. But that brings up a good question. I want to talk about what this means for Arsenal on the grand scheme of things, right? I have a feeling that this could usher in a new era for Arsenal. And that's what I'm hoping for, right? That banter era is over, right? Mm. Arsenal now walking new the next season.
Don't let Tottenham get relegated, bro. Because it, I mean, it'll just be too the arrogant.
Then that's a treble. Right, if Arsenal wins Champions League, goes invincible in Champions League,
yeah,
and Tottenham get relegated, that's a treble for Arsenal. Yeah, I think another parade. Have another parade if Tottenham get relegated.
Sure.
But when I look at Arsenal's next season, winning the Premier League, even if they don't win Champions League, odds are there's going to be players that are going to be on the market that are going to now look at Arsenal and go, well, I want to go there. Yeah. That's what happens when you win. Players want to go to your play on your squad. They also want to win. So now we're going to get opportunities to sign players that maybe were just out. We would have had to overpay for just a little bit because we weren't the Manchester Cities. We weren't the Liverpools. So it's going to open up that opportunity. Obviously, Arsenal are going to get a lot of money for winning. The fact that they won the league with Pep Guardiola still in the league, I also think is important for Mikel Arteta and his confidence because he didn't have to wait for Pep Guardiola to leave. He won it with Pep in the league, and I think that's important. But now Pep leaves. So that means Manchester City is going to be under Enzo Maresca. Who knows if that's an instant success. Maybe it takes a little bit. Even if it's a quarter of a season, that might take them out of the conversation for the league itself.
Right.
Does this open up the doors for Mikel Arteta and Arsenal to now be considered? I don't want to use the term dynasty because I think you and I both probably have the same definition for dynasty where you got to win it four times in a row. But are they now firmly in the conversation every year as a team that should be winning it? Are they now one of those teams that you fear, not just that you fear because they play well, you fear because they are a team that should be and will be competing for the title every year?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Pep leaving, it's not confirmed Enzo Maresca is taking over, but if he does, there's going to be some...
This is the worst kept secret.
Adjustment. There's going to be some, getting used to just either a whole new system and all that. But it puts Arsenal in a place. I mean, even last year, people were kind of saying like Arsenal were the best team in the world and all this other stuff. I wonder. Look, I think the nature of playing in the Premier League. Oh, shout out to Joel Embiid.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. Proud to be a Gooner, baby.
Look at that. Maybe show that kind of energy when in the playoffs.
You know, let's leave him alone. Let's leave him alone for right now. Knicks in four.
So,
a day, by the way. Knicks also came back from a 22-point deficit in the fourth. This is crazy.
I mean, everything's coming up. New Yorker.
That's
anyway.
Right.
But it puts Arsenal in a position to realistically be the most dominant team in the world. They have structure, they have the quality. You sort of think about like obviously they're gonna sign some new players. Who's gonna stay? I even start thinking like long term, like, do you need Odegaard still? Like maybe it's time to start looking forward because he wasn't really contributing the same amount.
I think we didn't see the flashes of brilliance, but I also think his ability to, because Zubimendi was so effective. He had moments where it went, of course. It's a lot of matches in the Premier League that you get a lot more time off in La Liga. So I would understand that after the January transfer window, there would be a dip in his form. So that sucks. But he was so effective and he was so able to hold on to the ball. You couldn't dispossess him. In order for that to happen, you need Odegaard to check back. And I think Odegaard was so effective in checking back. We didn't see him be as effective and have those moments of brilliance that we used to see in the final third.
The credit...
So I don't want to say he had as good a season as he normally does, but he had things he did that helped us.
Okay? Sure. I think
Martinelli's gone, though.
Martinelli,
enjoy the parade, but you're gone. You're gone.
Well, Arteta did right. And like in hindsight, now that they are champions... The signing as a flawless.
What a moment. I feel bad. Our producer's a Tottenham fan, but for Tottenham to be very close to signing him and for him to be a lifelong, he was at the academy before he was ever at Crystal Palace. He was at Arsenal Academy. Yeah. And to be a lifelong Arsenal fan, to be able to make that phone call with Mikel Arteta and say, hey, man, look.
Don't make me do this.
Yeah, please. Basically, it was like, yo, I don't want to, dog. Maybe I could be like a mole on the inside, But I think with him to be able to make that phone call to Arteta and say, hey, it's in front of me. I either have to sign it unless you tel me there's a chance. And for Mikel Arteta to get that signing over the line,
And it's also...
The Cronkies haven't always been known to be those guys. And now they've given him the keys.
It's tell me there's a chance. And it's like, yeah, the chance is also you got to spend $90 million to move this over the line, which is, again, but the
fact that that check got signed is crazy.
That it says a lot about the faith that the Kroenkes have in Arteta. But look, but that signing, what Arsenal always needed was depth. Because they always dealt with injuries, and that is
always... And they did it in a big way this year, too, so, right? They always had injuries.
So the signing of Eze and Madueke, and then just good depth pieces, like Zubimendi ends up being super important because Mourinho gets hurt. Kai Havertz misses a ton of time.
Incapié. Who else was... Norgaard, even though he didn't get a ton of minutes, super
he was important,
important
in a couple games.
He came in clutch. That was a captain. And he's a backup player. I mean,
yeah.
And Miles Lewis-Skelly, wildly important. Max Dalman,
mm-hmm.
incredibly important. I mean, this is what you need to win a title.
It was a collective effort.
And as an Arsenal fan, and I'm not throwing shade on any other team, but if we're going to be honest, Manchester City, they won it with that 115 charges hanging over their head. You know,
yeah.
Liverpool, when they won it, everybody, sure, right? It's not a big deal. But it seemed like... No, I'm not saying that wasn't a big deal. I'm not saying... What I meant was...
Our other Liverpool producer
staring at me like I just... like I slapped her mom. But what I mean, not to say it wasn't a big deal when they won. What I'm suggesting was there was no major thing over the head, but it seemed like it came almost out of nowhere. And then you look at their team, you're like, well, they're actually pretty stacked.
Well, they were getting like some stick because they won during the COVID year.
So,
but then they won it properly.
But what I mean is after that, it felt like it came out of nowhere. No one was expecting that they would run away with the league the way they did. For Arteta to win this without, you know, I hate bringing up oil money or, you know, a big estate.
Let's not look into the how the Kroenkes make
money. All I'm saying is we know it ain't
let's
oil.
Let's not do that.
We know it ain't oil. Is what I'm saying. But I mean is like they're not owned by like a state. They're not owned by like a government fund.
Yeah.
None of those things. This was just straight up good old American ownership that won us the Premier League. Right? Excellent.
Hands are clean. Nobody ever did anything.
Don't look at the portfolios. You might not like what you see. What I mean is, this was just an owner committing to a manager and a manager finding a way to win.
That's probably the most shocking part. The commitment year after year after everybody was screaming about they were done with Arteta.
It took a sixth season in order for Mikel Arteta to deliver a title of the Premier League. But obviously, he won FA Cup his first season or his first half season, and that kind of gave him the time. But again, we talk about this all the time. Sir Alex Ferguson didn't become Sir Alex Ferguson until his fifth season. He was just an okay manager, but it wasn't really working out. Fifth season is when he starts winning. Sometimes it takes time, and you have to have real faith in a manager that they will get you over the line, because it's hard to commit to somebody with the amount of money that's available. And finishing second so many times, I said this, and Andy Haynes, we talked about this a little bit, who's been on the show. If he didn't win Champions League or the league title, there was a part of me that believed Mikel Arteta would walk away and go, maybe I'm not that guy.
Right.
So the fact that he won this, I think there's a certain pressure that's now off of him. Not to say there's no pressure being a manager of a Premier League club, but that will he, won't he is done. The asterisk on him being a great manager is over. Now he can really put in his exactly how he wants to play. It's not about just, we got to get over the line because everyone believes I can and I need to keep the job and I promise these players. Now it's the time to really flourish. Let me see everything that's in your head. Now I want to see it out on that pitch.
I honestly don't. I think they're going to just be like, okay, the set piece thing worked. Let's just keep doing that.
Again,
the data says what the data says. And when you have Saliba, you have Magalhães, you have these players.
It's not just them, though. I don't know if you saw the clip of Kyle Walker. Kyle Walker was talking about when he got done by Gabriel Magalhães. Do you remember where he was like slapping Magalhães or whatever? And he still scored on him. This is when he was his last year at City. He talked about, he goes, the whoever was interviewing asked him, like, what is it about those set pieces? He's like, no one in football has ever moved the way they're moving. Like, this just wasn't what you did in set pieces. Like, we've all been doing set pieces the same way for years. No one's ever made the runs they're making. And he even said, he goes, you know, you have to look at where the ball's coming from, but you have to keep like your peripheral on them. He goes, and suddenly they're coming this way. So you think like, oh, and you shift your momentum. And then next thing you know, they're behind you. So it's a simple juke.
Yeah.
You know, again, American sports influencing the set piece. This is very NFL and NBA-like.
I would imagine the set piece coach has like those like NFL, like when you're picking the plays in Madden and all the players are a blocker, you know, who's running the post.
Right, exactly. So. All right, so you're going to go over the pick. Top of the key, everybody. Top of the key.
So, look, it works. Why change it if it ain't broken? You know what I mean? Why fix it if it's not broken? I think we're going to see kind of like more of the same. I also think clubs are going to copy Arsenal. I think we're going to see more. And
that's what happens anytime you win.
And
right?
And even this season, there were teams that were kind of doing similar stuff during set pieces. I forgot which one. What one team like kind of did the
was
thing.
It Sunderland also tried it?
I don't remember. There was one team that, like, you know, all the players stood on one side and then right before the ball is kicked, they all move into like their positions and stuff like that, which is obviously very Arsenal. So,
start getting into 3-point stands. Well, my point is, I think if Arsenal win the Champions League, I think this ushers in a whole new era. Banter era is over. This becomes Arsenal's sort of chip to lose every year.
Yeah, and honestly, if they win Champions League, I mean, it will be really, really impressive against a very, very strong PSG. Like, and again, two completely different philosophies on how to play the game. Like, Arsenal are probably going to have a lot of the ball. They're going to slow the game down a bit. They're going to PSG is trying to force any kind of mistake. So it's going to be a little bit of a unmovable, you know, object against an unstoppable force. Yeah. And we'll see how it ends up. But this puts Arsenal. I mean, just to wrap up, like my thoughts on this. I do think seeing what made it really cool is like the especially the photos and videos of Declan Rice, Timber, Saka, and Eze at the Emirates at like 4 a.m.
Yeah, man.
And fans showing up. Fans cannot believe that they're there.
So people are just gathering around Emirates just to take pictures.
And nobody's like, you would imagine people are drunk or whatever. And nobody's like really bothering them. They're just so happy to see them. They're so grateful. And so it just highlights just that. Like in general, I don't necessarily care that much if it's not my team, I don't care that much. But seeing the seeing it from the perspective of those fans who get to have these like incredibly like sincere moments with these players, and they're not screaming like crazy. They're not trying to jump on them. They're just like thank you.
Just appreciative.
They just thank you.
When Declan goes, guys, let's take a picture of my phone. The one kid goes, a picture with you? Are you sure?
It's wholesome. It's sweet, man.
I don't know why no one asked Wemby about. Let's pull up the tweet. Yeah, this is from Hotter Report, Hater Report.
Hater Report. Wemby was asked.
Is this real?
Yeah. What's I did see
Wemby
this.
Was asked who he has in the Champions League final. He said, oh, come on, PSG, of course. At least PSG gonna make it somewhat fun because I know Arsenal ain't. Guess what? Neither are the Knicks when you face them in the finals, dog.
We shall see. They lost that second game.
That's right. Actually, please, you gotta get past OKC.
And speaking of, who was the one marking Wemby in that game? Former Nick.
Hartenstein, baby.
I Heart himself.
Locked it down, bro.
He's like, they can't call every foul.
Whatever. Hey. Wow, Tottenham fan wakes up. He said marking him or grabbing him, whatever it takes.
This is where you
want to. The guy's 7'19", whatever it takes.
This is where you choose to weigh in, Carter.
Yeah, damn.
Okay.
All right. I've never wanted Tottenham to get relegated more. He's a Knicks hater, though, so it makes sense.
We could spend all our time talking about Arsenal, but there's another Arsenal fan that needs to weigh in. We spoke to Zoran at the Harlem Tavern after a big announcement.
Yeah, that's right. We talked to Zoran.
We talked to the mayor. He's one of the homies, but we got to sit down with him, and Alexis got to celebrate a little bit with him. So check this out.
We are here with Premier League champion, come on, Mayor of New York City.
How's it going, guys?
Wow. I mean, the one, the only.
You thought it was Kai Havertz.
Yeah, no. That's
I did that.
Look, I know we have to talk about the tickets. You're doing wonderful things. We're going to get to it. What was the feeling like when that final whistle blew on Bournemouth City?
I think it was just a mixture of shock and just, it was like a wave of excitement just washes over you as you're processing. I mean, we've been waiting for this for so long.
It didn't feel real.
And having lived through that West Ham game. Oh. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The refs got it wrong there.
Yeah. No. God bless.
Yeah, VAR is goated.
God bless.
Can we get a key to the city?
Get that tattoo.
Okay. Well, you, as an Everton fan, I'd like to claim a little bit of the credit.
You know, that, shout that, out to you. Shout out to you.
We was a group.
Tino Barry.
We needed that 3-3.
Yeah, that's right.
We needed that.
Yeah. Let's
Doku can score as many bangers as he wants to equalize.
Yeah, exactly. We got the draw. Yeah. We're honored to be here. This is an incredible announcement. Obviously, 1,000 tickets being given away for New Yorkers. I want you to talk about the fact that this is just such a huge priority for you, like to make things affordable, especially given with the beautiful game.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, soccer at its heart is a working class game, and yet we've seen so many working class people be priced out of it. We're so excited to be hosting the World Cup, and yet I know that for many New Yorkers, they were looking at the prices and they were asking themselves, how could I ever even try to purchase this ticket given the cost? And so last year when I was running, I said that we needed to make tickets cheaper for New Yorkers. And so today I'm so proud that we're announcing these 1,000 tickets and that they're $50 a ticket and that it comes with free round trip bus to the stadium so that every New Yorker could actually see themselves as part of it, because we don't want sports to become a luxury commodity. We don't want this to be... We don't want the in-person to be understood as exclusively remote.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so many of us grow up as fans thinking the only way to interact is through a TV. But people should actually be able to go.
Yeah.
And this is going to be so exciting. And one of the most beautiful things is it doesn't matter who you know. It's a lottery.
Right.
So Monday, 10 a.m. to midnight, for 6 days it'll run. You can enter once a day, 50,000 entries a day. If you get selected, you have the chance to buy a ticket for yourself and one other person. And that's what the game should be.
Because I mean, we spent so much time trying to know the right people.
Yeah.
And it's nice to not have to worry about that.
I have an idea. What about 1,002? And we
have
to know you. I'm just suggesting. We could host the bus
this
ride.
This is how we got this.
We can host the bus ride. Entertain people on the way there. What if we get stuck in traffic?
Never enough.
Real quick, I'm going to go to the Emirates Stadium for the watch party. And I sometimes do their show live from N5 with their YouTube show. Want me to give them a little message? Want to say a little message to the Arsenal fans?
What a day. What a year. I mean, I still can't believe this. 22 years, 8-2, all of these horrible moments we have lived through.
You hate to see it.
And we are here now. We always knew this day could come. Thank you to everyone who's a part of this. Sometimes people have tried to laugh at us as Arsenal fans. In the words of MLS, we got the bottle now.
Let's go. Bottle of champagne, huh?
Come on.
Let's go.
Thank you so much, man.
Cheers,
thank you, guys.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Christian.
Let's go.
We got stars coming in. And you know what? It's not about the stars that just play the game. Some of them play the game so well, they get to run around the world and talk about it.
Okay.
And this is one of those guys. In fact, he's gearing up for, you and I are going to have a hellish summer. This guy, not only is he going to have a hellish summer, but he's got to be camera ready the whole time. So that's going to be tough. The one, the only Fox Sports analyst, one of our favorite people to ever have on the show. The only reason I ever wanted a Bolton Wanderers kit. The one, the only Stu Holden, everybody.
Hey. Because you mentioned Bolton, guys, big win for Bolton
the other day.
Yeah,
they're in the playoff final against a guy I know you know as well, my brother's former team, Stockport County. So I'm actually thinking of floating this out there today. I need an idea for a bet between the two of us on whoever's team wins, what the punishment should be. Now, these, consider we're competitive brothers here, so it has to, like, the stakes have to be high.
Okay.
You can't do shave your head, right? Because you got to be on TV.
Well, I can't do that for on camera. Those stakes would be a little too high there. You know, maybe maybe like flour to the, I don't know. I got to think of something embarrassing.
I mean, but, your brother is obviously famously Plain Bay.
Plain Bay.
If you look up Plain Bay, the lore, it was a couple years ago. Maybe there's something, some sort of viral, maybe we can sort of take away put on a pedestal. Maybe there's something we can do to ruin his image. If, maybe that could be the bet, the wager.
I think I got it. There's a bunch of viral videos of, these are just dudes being dudes, but one of the guys will end up taking a nap or falling asleep, and they are woken up with a barrage of flour, barbecue sauce, you know, ketchup, orange juice, all being poured of them one after another, after another, after another. Maybe the thing is, whoever loses has to fall asleep on like a tarped over couch, and at some point they will be woken up by a barrage of different sauces and flour, and there's just nothing you can do. But you're completely covered in honey.
I think we're onto something. Yeah, we can workshop this. He's a new dad, so he's tired. He's fallen asleep in all kinds of crazy places.
This will be a good opportunity. Right. And then
you never know when it'll happen. You just never know.
You also, your kids could also get involved as well. I'm sure they would love to do that to their uncle if you win.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So, Stu, it's always a pleasure to have you on. I mean, we've had the luxury and privilege of having you on our show either remotely or in studio over the years over several World Cups. It's kind of remarkable that we've lasted this long. I know you didn't believe it. We did. We definitely did it. But you are covering, obviously, one of the commentators for Fox for the World Cup, the exclusive broadcaster of the World Cup this summer. Now, everything that you've learned in previous World Cups, what do you feel more prepared for? And this is a problem that I wasn't expecting, but this is how I know how to handle it this time around.
So the big difference from when my first Men's World Cup was 2018 in Russia. That was 32 teams. Now they're just like, hey, 48 teams, let's go, guys. Not considering that we have to prep for now 16 more different teams. Instead of being a match countdown in the 60s, we're at 104 matches, Christian.
I just hope your pay reflects the increase in matches. That's all. We're looking out for Stu.
Yeah, you want to be my agent, please? Yeah.
More nations means more dollars, baby.
I think, honestly, the benefit for me having done... Now, this will be my sixth World Cup in total between the men's and the women's side, is that I've just built up this inherent knowledge now of teams, of players, of styles of play, and I know what to expect. I definitely over-prepared for my first World Cup, which I think is not the worst thing, right? But I got very stressed heading into that one about what do I need to know, what are the most important things, what are the things I'm going to use the most in a broadcast. So now that has really changed over the course of time, where I know what I need to hone in on. I've narrowed down. Instead of watching 15-20 games of a team, I'm watching more so how they build up, how they defend, their set pieces, key players, key storylines. And then look, in our business, guys, less is more. Sometimes, there's stories that need to be told, and then these games are so awesome. The stakes are so high. There's so much energy in the crowd. And we have found between John and I, like, we've just got to let the game be the game and add where we can. And it's our job to enhance that experience and not try to be, not that we ever did, because we started with this mantra, but we're not the stars in this show. The stars is the 90 minutes of action on the field. And we always think that it is our job to elevate and to pay that off and to make sure that you get that best experience. So all of that being said, my prep has actually shrunk a little bit, but it's more laser focused and on the stuff that I know is important to the broadcast.
All right.
And now this is one of my favorite parts, is just you and John Strong have a chemistry that is very similar to Christian and I. You can tell that both of you guys have been doing this for a while and you still really enjoy it. And it's a lot of fun. And that fun bleeds over to the audience. But when it comes to a World Cup, clips of the U.S. hosting it or the U.S. commentary sometimes leaks out and the rest of the world gets to hear you guys. And one of the things that sometimes is said is that, like, it feels like you guys aren't talking to, like, diehard soccer fans, people who've been watching it their whole lives, the same way they are in Europe. Talk to me a little bit about that, because I know you have such a tough task of, like, you have to usher in people that may not watch soccer all the time. Fox has got a huge audience. The World Cup is a massive audience. This is an opportunity for people who've only ever watched NFL or hockey or basketball or baseball to suddenly hear something about soccer. Who are you really talking to? Talk to me a little bit about how difficult it is, because you've been playing your whole life. You know how to talk to talk.
Alexis, I don't say this often, man. That's a really good question for you.
All right, we're gonna put it on the refrigerator.
The cherry on top
was the "for you." Perfect.
Here's the reality of this question: is you could ask 50 different people, and 50 different people would tell you that a different response and a different way how to handle this. And we have a different, I would say, strategy or perspective than perhaps CBS and NBC. And Apple TV and MLS, and it comes down to, at the end, like, this is a subjective nature, where you might like one thing and Christian likes another thing and my wife and kids like to hear another thing, But at the end of the day, we are really talking to a lot of the same fans, and we are talking to a soccer fan. The hardcore soccer fan, they're going to tune in no matter what. They want to watch that game. They're going to consume every second. The numbers and the data, though, do tell us that on any given weekend, Premier League just smashed their record where they had Man City against your Arsenal boys. They did over 2 million in English language, another couple million in Spanish language, huge audience. For context, though, our Gold Cup final between the U.S. and Mexico did a much bigger number than that game even. So that tells you, okay, you've got people that are tuning in that are casual sports fans that want to watch the United States of America and they want to watch national team stuff. Our World Cup numbers are even that times 4 or 5. You know, our conservative estimates for the U.S. games are going to be north of 15, 20 million, I think, for the U.S. opening match against Paraguay. And so we know that we are speaking also then now to a different fan. But I would say we've had a noticeable shift even within, I think, the way we think about this of saying, let's not overthink it. Let's talk about the game at a high level. The fan now craves that information. They want to feel like they're getting real insight and they're learning about the game. I say this, I've never played a snap of football in my life, American football. But I can sit here and talk about a nickel package and a cover zone and you got to rush from the outside edge. Like, I don't know what those things are before, but I've learned from commentators. Yeah. So I like that people are teaching and educating me. And I think I'm not trying to get super overly technical and refer to like sixes and nines and twos as a fullback and an inverted fullback. That feels a little jargony and a little overdoing it. But I do want to talk in a way that hopefully educates people and helps them learn in a way that's still approachable, but we're not dumbing down the game. I don't think we need to dumb down the game. It almost insults your audience. And I think we need to try to talk to soccer fans at their level and help even the savviest of fans still feel like they're learning in those moments.
Has been a fun sort of an interesting experience about like being in this space. Like we joined the soccer space as stand-up comedians, right? And the barrier of entry sometimes seems a little high, where people are like, do you really know the game? Do you really know the game or whatever? And then over the years, we've had you on a show, we've had John on the show, and we hear your voices, and then people get to know you, and then this is what we try to humanize athletes and people in media and stuff like that. But one thing that's been fascinating about talking to all you guys, and we just had Landon Donovan on, who's also one of the commentators for Fox. But being in the soccer world, sometimes people are like, oh man, like Stu Holden, I don't like Stu Holden, or what? Or like, they'll say it in front of us, and I'm like, this is a nice guy, man. What are you doing? Like, it feels too personal now. Like, he's not just a voice coming out of the TV. There's a human being around that. But it shows how deeply there's an emotional connection to the person that is speaking to you through the TV. Where people are very easily will be like, I hate Troy Aikman or I hate whatever, like the whatever announcer and stuff like that. But that part of it has been where we've grown this like emotional connection to the people. Because I know the work behind everything that you do, so it can't just be like, I don't like that guy. I'm like, he's more than just the voice on the TV.
First of all, that's totally fine with me, because I always equate like the people that will go out of their way to go online to tweet something at me like, I can't stand you as a commentator. Those are the people, by the way, that get on Yelp and review experiences only when they've had a bad experience.
Right.
Let's say you and I watch the game. It's the equivalent of going to a good resort. You're on vacation. You have a great time. You enjoyed it. But it wasn't like so great that you have to get on and be like, I got to write a review. I'm not a review guy.
Right.
You know, I'm just not. Even if I had the best experience of my life, I don't need to get on that company's website.
Right.
I feel like I'm paying for that
product
and they delivered. Awesome. Great. But if you go and all of a sudden, your room service food is cold and the guy by the pool is annoying you or whatever, you get on and you're angry and you write, like those are the people that just want to like yell and be mad about something. So it's fine. That's what the internet exists for. I know that I'm not everybody's favorite. I know I have people that love the commentary work that I do. I know I have people that don't. I love my job. I put so much into it. I work so hard and I know, and I recognize that it's subjective and I'm not going to please everyone. I think once I got that out of my head at the beginning, because I had a lot of people and players, that fans throughout my career when I was a player. Now, but I would also play against opposing teams and you'd have fans that yell and scream at you. this is similar in a way, right? Like if you're, let's say you're in a New York, we got a New York City fan and we got an LAFC fan. If LAFC is playing better, you're probably going to like me more because I'm complimenting your team. New York City fans are like, you're so biased, you know, blah.
Yeah.
I call the game down the middle. I love my job. I work hard. And, you know, the rest of it is all kind of just noise to me. I got great advice very early on. Said only seek feedback and advice from people that you would ask for and respect. And that's not, unfortunately, the people on the internet that have never sat in my position.
I will say.
Oh, you don't want advice from Slinky Cat Sexy 69? What?
I will say.
Maybe.
I will say.
It's not about soccer.
I will say there's a almost a net positive that more American fans can be annoyed at the commentator. Like if American soccer fans are getting to the degree where they're so knowledgeable about the game that they can be annoyed with the commentator. I'm like, hey, you know, something's working. Like,
hey, let me ask you guys this. I'm flipping the script here, but like long traditionally, it has been British voices that you probably grew up with hearing on your TV. And I know there's still a debate around American voices and British voices and certain games, certain people, especially they feel like they want to hear the British accent. Could be the worst commentator in the world, but if you got an accent, people are like, whoa. This guy knows what he's talking about.
Right. Yeah.
Trevor Noah did a wonderful skit a couple years back when he was watching his first World Cup in his country. It was the Fox one in 2018. And he made a skit about this entire thing. He said, look, I grew up with British voices and they sound so rich. And Neymar's got the ball. He passes the ball to his right. And it's very slow cadence. You know, our broadcasting styles are different. And then he said there was this Latino gentleman and everything was, oh, here's Rui on the surprise, goal. And there was like, that's a different style to then ours. He described what I would assume was John. He's like, and Neymar's running with the ball and he's running down the wing. And, you know, it's different styles. He said it was jarring to him at first, but he ended up liking it. Yeah. So, I'm curious where you guys kind of stand on this.
I think I'd still be on CBS if people respected American voices in soccer. I think and they didn't want especially producers just wanted European voices. But I think in the end, I think no matter what an American says, there's always going to be a group of people that absolutely hate it. And I also think to your point, it's not just the guy who leaves a review. That's also the guy that when he sees you is like, yo, Stu, dude, yes. I hated you on 100%. This game. But yo, you also said this. I have a
Did
great
I get
tip.
A selfie?
We were at an event and afterwards we all went out for drinks and one of your co-hosts, Alexi Lalas, was there and a Mexican dude saw him and goes, oh my God, dude, I hate you. My mother hates you. Can we take a picture? Let me send it to her. Yo, you beat Mexico and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yo, it was so great to meet you. And I was like, what a confusing series of sentences. But that's like the sometimes an emotion is the reward. Sometimes just having an emotion is getting something out of somebody.
You're 100% right. You guys know this. You're in this business. You, if you're not interesting or stoke emotion, you're just another person in the mix, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what we say: be interesting, be smart, be. I'm not saying be controversial, but you know, Alexi stokes emotion from people. You want to hate him, you want to disagree with his takes, you want to shout at the TV, but you want to listen to him. Now, I'm not Alexi, but I want to have an opinion. I want to be interesting. I want to. I don't want to be in the middle. You don't want to be just blah. That doesn't exist in this business. And so I think you can separate from that in different ways, but that's what makes this business fun. You guys are knowledgeable. You're entertaining. You're funny sometimes.
Yeah, we get it. We try.
And
we'll delete that sometimes. We'll just delete that from the,
That's why you're still in this business. You know, otherwise you guys wouldn't be.
Right. So. Right. I mean, you know, you're mentioning just like almost like what we appreciate now from American commentary. Like you guys, you and John aren't doing as many MLS matches as you were in the past. But I've genuinely been missing hearing more of 45 down, 45 to go. I'm like, I didn't grow up with that, but that's now it's part of my thing, my lexicon.
Yeah.
So that's a part of it. And I know during CONCACAF Champions Cup, I'm like, oh, my guys are back on. So it's like, it's nice to hear you guys.
Well, so I mean, honestly, though, Christian, that's kind of what we're hoping to achieve as commentators. That for us is the sign of, you know, we've done well in a respect is that when you hear our voices, our hope is that you feel that it's a big game. That's how I feel when I watch Buck and Aikman and Brady and Burkhart and when you flip on that TV and it's NFL game, you hear those guys, you hear the Fox jingle, you're like, that's a big game.
Yeah.
So for us, it's trying to find that balance. We want to work every possible game that we can. It's complicated in this country because rights change hands all that different stuff. But our hope is, and what we're trying to emulate is, look, I want to be somewhere on and Madden. You want to be associated and thought of, like, and it's been really cool for me, honestly, the shift from being a player, like you guys talked about at the beginning. But I meet kids now that are 14, 15, that are like, yo, Stu, love your work. And I think in my head, I do the math. Yeah, I'm like, bro, wait, you only know me as a commentator. Right, last time I played was 12 years ago. So like to you, I am not a player. I am a TV personality. I'm a commentator. And that is cool for me now that I've kind of feel like I've reinvented a second career. One other story, I came back from Russia, my first World Cup. I go in the grocery store right around the corner from my house here. My kid runs around the aisle. I'm like, hey, Kenna, get back over here. And like this dude pops his head around the corner and he's like, bro, are you the guy that called the World Cup? And I was like, what? And he goes, I heard your voice and I recognized like you're the Stu Holden. And my head blew. Like I couldn't, it was insane to me that somebody now like had heard my voice, heard me yelling at my kid. And now I sound like a bad parent, first of all. And second of all, he's like that, you know, that was the moment for me where I realized the power and the responsibility I have.
Dude,
as a commentator.
We're kind of having, a similar thing. I mean, we hosted the Premier League Fan Fest in Kansas City last year, and a girl came up to us. She was probably like 20 or 21. And she was like, hey, I recognize your voices when I heard you guys. Your my dad used to play you in the car. When he would take me to school. Yeah. And I'm like, have we been doing this that long?
She was 11.
That's cool. That's cool, though, man. You know, like your voice is recognizable. Your brand, it's wild, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's really trippy.
It's really cool. In fact, you mentioned something about, like, now you have this career, this second career that young people kind of just known you for. When you played at such a high level. You were one of my favorite players. When you started coming back from injury, I was so hoping you would be ready for that World Cup because I was like, man, our team clicks when Stu Holden's in that midfield.
Oh, I appreciate it, man.
One of the things that I loved about you was just how, like, at the end of the match when you would do post-game conferences, because I did watch Bolton Wanderers. First of all, the only other kid I've ever loved as much as an Arsenal one was that big Reebok on the shoulder, bro. There's something about that. Everyone said it was ugly, and I'm like, I love this kid. What are you talking about?
It's
like
giant,
the blocking is so classic. But what I loved about you is how I could feel you drained, but you still gave it your all in that post-game conference. Talk to me a little bit how different this is. Because sometimes I'll tell a player like, oh yeah, we're traveling a lot. I'm tired. And it was almost, I feel bad saying tired. Because this guy's running every day of his life. And I'm just like, I'm tired. You know how hard it was to open that bag of Doritos? Are you finding that this career and also what you're about to do on Fox with this World Cup, it's going to be exhausting. You're putting yourself out there in a different way. Being on for the camera is very different than just running around making decisions, but it's still exhausting. Are you finding that?
Yeah. Well, first, I'm going to steal your analogy. We prepared for the marathon. Now it's time to run it.
Okay.
I truly, that resonates with me because one of our bosses used to say it's a marathon, not a sprint. And when we come out of these tournaments, we start with the opening day down in Mexico City. Next day is the USA. Next day is Brazil, Morocco. Like every day there is a final in essence of just these giant games. My first World Cup, we've talked about it a couple times already. It was in Russia. I was doing what they call the Russian red eye. So we'd call a game at 9 p.m., finish by 11, go eat a meal at 12, finish the meal by 1:30, go to the airport, fly from 3 to 7 to a new city, sleep at the hotel, call a game that night, boom, do it again. So now we're doing it in the United States. And I say to people, like, yeah, we're going to be tired. We're going to be low. We're going to be pumping through with adrenaline. It's going to be back to back to back. It's going to be grueling. But bring it on, man. Like, this is what we wanted. This is what we've been talking about for 8 years. John and I have told our bosses, like, give us everything you feel we're capable of and a little bit more, and we're going to push ourselves to the max because we want to be on these games. These are millions of eyeballs that will be watching this tournament. And for the first time in a long time on the men's side in the United States, 32 years since we've had this. What an honor, what a privilege. And it still hasn't quite set in for me that you know, I'm going to be front and center with that along with John, and we're going to be calling all the U.S. games. We're going to be doing, I think, 11 games in 15 days to start the tournament. So it's going to be a sprint. We're going to be ping-ponging from L.A. to New York to Atlanta to Kansas City to Seattle. And it's just, I'm trying to think about the preparation of that and working from back to front, but just being in a position again. John said this to me the other week. We were talking about all the different directions we're getting pulled in right now and all the promotional stuff we're doing around this tournament. It's going to hit this country like a tidal wave. I don't need to tell you guys. You guys know that. I still don't think people are prepared for how big this is going to be. But the most important thing for us still is to find time to enjoy this experience, because it's going to come. It's going to go. People are telling me, oh, it's, you know, 28 days till it starts, and it's, you know, 52 days till it's over. I was like, don't you mention that last number again. I don't want to think about this thing being over, because I know it's going to hit me like, you know, the circus leaves town. I'm going to have just this massive hangover. And I want to enjoy this, man. We all should. Anybody connected to this game, live in the moment, soak it up, go to the fan fest, go to the games, watch the games on TV, because I'm telling you, like, this can be once in a lifetime experience for some of people. And for me with two kids, I want my kids to lean in, man. This is going to be a transformative experience for them in their life.
Yeah, I mean, look, working
beautifully said, by the way. Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, that was beautifully said.
There's such a you know, getting, even for us, like getting to like cover World Cups and speak to players playing in it and stuff like that. But there is something different, especially the fact that it is a World Cup at home. So from the media perspective, there definitely feels a little bit more care of being like, all right, yeah, it is. It's another World Cup, but we have the opportunity to inspire a lot of folks to get more involved in this game. And, you know, and a lot of the players are always asked about, you know, how you feel about this home World Cup and all that other stuff. Like, I wonder, you know, you've touched on that a little bit. We just had Christian Pulisic on the show, which was also really cool.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. By the way, I loved your MLS comment. Oh, that's
anything we can do to make him laugh. We're trying our best.
Tough guy to make laugh.
You got him to laugh. That's good. Impressive.
Yeah. Tough guy. Tough guy to make laugh.
When it comes to, you know, we asked this same thing to Landon Donovan. Obviously, Christian Pulisic is going to be a very important player that you guys are putting, have to put a lot of focus on. He's going to be in all the commercials during the games and everything. Do you have any advice that you could give as a former player and then also working, you know, as a media member in for the World Cup? Do you have any advice that you could give to Christian Pulisic about how to handle this World Cup?
It would be impossible for me to put myself in his position, because I give him a credit. You know, played at a higher level than I did in my career. He's shouldered the responsibility of being a captain for this team, a guy that's expected to deliver, and that comes with being the best player. The only thing I would say for Christian is that enjoy it. I feel like when he is at his best is when he's almost carefree. And I love how he says or talks about, people love to tell me how much pressure is on me. The pressure is there, okay? He's a player that is no stranger to that. And I think if he can find a zone where he is that kid again that is on the field with his buddies, and these are his buddies, this national team, these guys are close, and just understand not overthink the opportunity and the pressure and the home World Cup, but be like, what a privilege it is for us to be on this field right now representing the United States. How lucky are we to be these 26 guys instead of, you know, it's our responsibility to do this and do that. No, how lucky are we? Like, I think, an incredible sense of perspective now as a dad, when I'm at these soccer fields every single weekend and I watch these kids play, thousands and thousands of kids. And I've had some moments that have been nostalgic to me where I've sat there and I've thought, oh my gosh, man, I did this and I was one of the very few. And the reality is, of these 3,000 kids at this tournament I'm sitting at, maybe one goes pro. I made it pro. I played in a World Cup. I represented my country. Like, I live my dream. And I think sometimes that gets lost in the shuffle. So that would be my advice to these guys on the field, is like, how lucky are you, man? I would give everything to be on that field right now again. And I did that. And I've had perspective now being away from the game for 12 years. I feel that way about being in the booth. They should be standing there. I'm not a jealous guy. I will be the most jealous guy on June 12th, when that U.S. team is standing there, hand on their heart on that field, I would give anything. And I'm insanely jealous that they get that opportunity, and I think they should enjoy it.
I love it. Yeah.
And by the way, you said you didn't play at a high level. You made Owen Coyle. You made Owen Coyle's offense look smooth, which is not easy. That guy was old school, Route 1, man. Yeah. If you made his look exciting, bro, you played at a high level for me. I'm a real fan. I don't know if you've ever gotten that from the times we've interviewed. I'm a real fan.
If you know Owen Coyle, you're a real fan, man. I appreciate you.
I watched you everywhere. Gary Cahill. Come on, dog.
Cahill is my guy. Hey, look, man. You know, you just said Cahill. I just bought these off of eBay. I got the trading cards of my Bolton team. I'm going to get the whole starting 11 frame for that year.
Bro.
Man.
Because my kids have gotten really into, you know, Marcos Alonso, by the way, who's still playing right now for Celta Vigo. Zat Knight, Grittar Steinsen, Tamir Cohen, Jack Wilshere, Chung Yong Lee. Bro, we had a Johan Elmander. But your guy Kaler, he got the sleeve.
Yeah.
That's dope. But what was the Asian dude's name you said? Yo, he was a baller.
Chung
Yong
Lee. Yeah, for South Korea. He was a baller, man. Yeah.
Oh my God. We can cut this part out, but were you there when Fabrice Muamba had his heart situation?
So I was on the team. I wasn't at the game. He was at, because I was injured. Yeah. He was at Tottenham. Yeah, that was crazy.
That's how much I watched. Bro. I was watching that game.
That was wild.
Incredible. Yeah.
That's how much I cared about Bolton in that era when all the players were
from around.
Man, I
appreciate you, Alexis. Love that.
Also, by the way, first time ever that somebody important has ever quoted one of our interviews back to us, which is crazy. That is a first. So I'm going to give myself one of them right there.
Thank you so much.
I want to know about, you know, you have children.
Also, that's how I prep, man. If there's anything with anybody, I'm watching,
dude,
right? You know, I've got my
smart guy.
I got my
you
notes
have children,
folder,
right?
And you guys are in my Google sheet.
Very nice. I want to see this Google sheet. It says like two idiots, but this happened on the show.
I'll show you a picture, man. I have all the teams, caps, goals, appearances, notes. Like, I'll share my prep board. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which we call you have children, right? So you're probably giving advice, and you mentioned advice to Christian Pulisic, and what could you possibly say? You've been in the situation though where, you know, your dream as a child is to one day score the winning goal in the World Cup, and you picture it, you're running around the lights and everybody's screaming. There's a group of players right now that were on the fringe. There's a group of players that were superstars that it felt like their name has been written in marker for this team. And there's a group of players that are going to get a call for the first time ever and get that moment. When you think back to that moment for yourself, is there something, did you get the chance to look around? Is there maybe you could say something to all the players that are about to be named on this roster in a short period of time that maybe you could give them advice? Maybe it's to look around and soak in that moment. And did you ever get that chance yourself?
These next 11 days are the most nerve-wracking, intensive, emotion-driving moments that you can find, because you realize, look, every time a player is a kid, as you said, you're in the yard, my son does it in the back, he's dribbling around, he shoots, he scores, he wins the World Cup for the United States. You know, he's won the World Cup 1,000 times already in his head. But that's the dream. There's professional soccer, there's playing in the Premier League, there's Champions League, MLS, and then there's the World Cup. The World Cup is its own category. That's the highest sense of pride and achievement in our game. So when you're now 8 or 9 days away from potentially realizing that dream, and it's years and years of work, you don't want to do anything to ruin that. You realize that the decision is really out of your hands at this point. You've done everything you can do, and now it's a coach that's going to make that final decision. Bob Bradley called in 30 guys into camp in 2009 ahead of the 2010 World Cup, and 23 made the roster. So we had a two-week intensive training camp in Princeton, New Jersey, and seven of my brothers, didn't make that roster. And I was one of the fortunate guys that did. And you're conflicted in that moment because you know seven of your friends have their dreams have ended, and 23 of them have now are about to live their dream. So I had a moment to myself where I kind of sat there in shock and you relive these childhood moments and memories and everything that's gone into it. And you want to share with your family. And, you know, my dad had just passed away at the beginning of 2009. And I remember crying, thinking about, you know, how proud he would have been to see me get this opportunity. He got to see me play pro in the Olympics, but this is the World Cup, man. And I even had a moment before I stepped on the field against England with the United States where my number was up on the board. I came on as a sub, and I remember looking up and looking at the field and thinking, here we go. And then the game is going. And then you don't think about it ever again. And it's not until many, many years from now. I'm not sitting here on this podcast if I hadn't played in a World Cup. You know, I wouldn't have the position I have in the booth if not for the World Cup. So you make your dream, and then your dream has given me everything I have in my life. And that's the power of the World Cup. That's the power of what these guys are about to experience. And the reality, unfortunately, for some is that they won't. And that's just the cutthroat nature of professional sports.
I love how
Two things have made your career is you were in the World Cup and that you have a Scottish passport. What a life.
My mom actually had this fact for me the other day. I don't know if I even knew it until just yesterday. I was with her in Houston. She was at a dinner table, dinner party. People were talking about the World Cup. And she said, did you know that my son was the only player in the World Cup in 2010 that was born in Scotland? He was the only Scottish player in like the last however many years it's been a World Cup. I was like, oh, that's kind of fun.
That's and a
I
mom played fact against right England there.
For the United States.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'm like, you romanticize a lot of it, but I'm like, part of being Scottish is like, yeah, let's kick England's ass. Like,
And we did. We topped the group. So I was like, you know, Scotland's favorite player for a month period there.
Well, Stu, you know, every time you are on the show, I don't think it's overstepping anything. It feels like obviously talking to a dear friend, and we've been, rising tide lifts all boats. We've kind of been on the same kind of journey last decade.
And I remember we were playing FIFA together. And
That
was before it was EAFC. Yeah. Like, we were old. Yeah. We were. For real.
We old, son.
When our studio was above Madison Square Garden. Wild. So, Stu, it is always an absolute pleasure. And getting to have these conversations, especially looking forward to another World Cup for you, it's always a pleasure to just hear your voice and hear the growth in knowledge and expertise and everything. And you and John have become absolute staples to, I think, just American homes when it comes to American soccer. So, Stu, thank you.
Keep putting a good fight for us, man. You know, when those Yelp reviews come in, you're like, bro, y'all are crazy, man. This is five star right here.
Brother, we're seeing the comments on our Pulisic interview, bro. We got to deal with it, too.
It's part of it, man. No, I appreciate it. I always love coming in. Love you guys' energy. Love what you do, man. Keep doing your work, bros. I'll see you guys in New York. We'll knock a few back.
Oh, yeah, we'll do.
Let's go.
All right, cheers, Stu.
We got 22 days left before the World Cup begins, and people are starting to realize that there are more teams than just Brazil, France, and Argentina. We're going to pick our dark horses because we think one of these teams is going to send one of the powerhouses home early. I'm going to go first.
Go ahead, hit me.
Wrong button. The United States. Dark horse. Okay.
One of us had to do it.
the U.S., in just the nature that they're hosting, yes, it might sound, it's not necessarily crazy that they could get a little bit far in this tournament. Mm-hmm. We've been speaking to so many players leading up to, just this episode, but leading up to the World Cup. And the confidence is clearly there. I mean, everybody's sort of doubting the team and their quality and stuff like that. But I don't sense that even one bit from the players themselves. And the fact that they're hosting will provide a bit of a boost. I could see similar to, you know, South Korea in 2002 had a good tournament, similarly where nobody really expected much from them. So the nature of the hosting, and we can talk about the players themselves that play in all these different clubs, and the quality of it is there. They just have to kind of piece it together. The group is, I think, fairly favorable. I think they'll be fine in the group, and I believe they can get out of it. But that's kind of...
They need to get out of it in order to be a dark horse.
As far as... I think once they get out of the group, that's when the normal concerns that we all have. But I think psychologically and mentally, I think they're there.
All right. I'll go next. And for me, I think the one, the only... I've talked about this many times before, but Norway. I think for Norway to be back in the World Cup, for this to be the first time that we're going to see Erling Haaland in a World Cup, where remember when he just missed out on the Ballon d'Or And a lot of the conversation around, he's had a stellar club season with Manchester City, but he doesn't really do well with the national team. The national team doesn't do well enough for us to see him internationally. I think he's going to wipe all that argument away in this World Cup. I think he's the most dominant striker in the game right now, probably the most dominant I've ever seen, right? Because I didn't see Alan Shearer play really until the towards the end of his career. So for me, I think this is going to be, he's going to have a showing that's incredible. I think Odegaard wants to take some of that. You know, there's a little bit of a stink on him after the season he's had with Arsenal. Yes, they won, but a lot of people were saying, like, yeah, is he kind of done? Is it over with? You know, Odegaard doesn't have that those moments of brilliance that we were used to seeing, or certainly not as many. So for me, Sorloth also coming in top form, I have a feeling Norway's going to, I don't think they win the whole thing, but I think they're going to shock a lot of people. And would you be surprised to see Erling Haaland scoring 10, 15 goals in the World Cup? Probably like not.
Golden Boot. I mean, it wouldn't be that shocking. And Haaland is known to score, like, in bunches of games. Look at this.
First of all, the bigger guy isn't Erling Haaland. Defenders are not ready for Norway's front two at the World Cup. They have the eighth best chance to win the World Cup per Poly Market.
Okay, Mr. Poly Market.
Damn, pleasure to meet you, Mr. Poly. Erling Haaland looks like a child for the first time ever. Sorloth is a beast of a human being.
Sure, sure.
There's a lot of Viking blood going on between these two.
Look, that's going to be the biggest threat in the attack. It's really the defending. They don't really have world-class defenders. So that's where the kind of the weak point
might
is.
Might be fun to see them win every game 6-4. know what I mean?
But my next dark horse pick, speaking of the defenders, I'm going to go with Ecuador. I think, has a real shot, especially because of their defending. We're looking towards the Champions League final. Defenders, two center backs, kind of, you know, fullbacks as well. Piero Incapié and Pacho.
Premier League champion.
So we got a Premier League champion, a Champions League winner, and they'll be playing together. So Ecuador is known for just stout defending. Their issues are up top. They don't really have a ton of attacking options, but they're going to make it really difficult. I could imagine them playing against one of the powerhouse countries. It'd be 0-0, 1-1. Set pieces are going to be really important. Maybe they win in penalties and knock somebody out that, you know, a lot of people didn't expect. So, but Ecuador is a good team that plays well in Conmebol, and they know how to handle the challenges in Conmebol. It doesn't really matter what team they play. They're still like one of the best teams. So, Ecuador is my second dark horse.
I'm hearing a lot of people name them as their dark horse, and they are sneaky good. I'm going to go a different route. I'm going to Africa, and I'm going sub-Saharan here, because I think Senegal, oh my God, first of all, a run in the Africa Cup of Nations. They won, you know, whatever. They got the trophy.
We all saw it.
I don't care what Fop Mob says, bro.
We were there with Mir Mamdani.
Yeah, we were hosting the event, bro. They obviously, to me, they won Africa Cup of Nations. Morocco, enjoy the trophy if you could ever get it, because I think it's being held at the army barracks in Senegal, which is true, by the way.
Imagine a war starts because
they want the trophy.
They try to infiltrate.
For me, I mean, this is just when I look at them, obviously they got, you know, Sadio Mane, of course, they Idrissa Gana Gueye. There's a couple players that you might know of if you only watch European football.
Yeah.
But most importantly, what we saw during Africa Cup of Nations is that they play as a team and they are very solid all the way through. So for me, the fact that they've had such tough matches already and they've sort of built that medal, I think they're going to walk into the World Cup with a slightly different confidence, and they're not going to need a match or two to get going. I think they're going to be dead set ready to go, and I think that puts them into the competition of being a dark horse, because for me, dark horse means you got at least, in this one there's a round of 32, you got at least get to the round of 16 for that to be like qualified as a dark horse. I think Senegal gets there.
Okay, I love it. My last dark horse is going to be Japan.
Okay, heard of them.
Especially because of their recent wins. They had two big wins in friendlies against England and Brazil. They beat England 1-0, if I remember correctly. But look, we're looking at it here. Eighth consecutive World Cup appearance. And they were the first nation to qualify for this World Cup as well. Mm-hmm. But with players, especially like Mitoma from Brighton, like they're looking like they're going into the tournament in just very good form. I would even argue maybe they don't even belong as a dark horse. I mean, not a favorite either. But Japan is somewhere. If there was a ranking of dark horses, they're probably really high up there because they're a really, really strong team.
I think it says right here, the World Cup dark horses is from Next Mex official. Okay, sounds like a childhood snack. according to this ranking heading into 2026, Morocco, Japan, Ecuador, Paraguay, and Mexico, what team deserves or doesn't deserve to be in this list? That's their ranking for dark horses. So Japan and Ecuador, two of the ones you picked, are right in that.
Sure.
None of the ones I picked.
Shout out, Next Max. We all the same vibe.
Right, of course. That's when you get tacos
Paraguay,
with cheese.
Paraguay and Mexico. Maybe Mexico. I'm like,
well, it's Next Max. So they're going to throw Mexico in there.
All right. Paraguay is kind of a wild one.
For me, Paraguay, best of luck, Paraguay.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, Austria. For me, Austria is just one of those nations where Ralf Rangnick is still their manager, and yeah, he talked about this last at the Euros where he wanted to run them almost like a club team, get them playing like a club team, which I know is very difficult for nations to do. You sort of have to play to the advantages you have, and sometimes that's a superstar player or a strong, you know, defensive line or something, right? Austria plays much more like a team. They can press like a team, which is incredibly hard to do when it comes to a national team. And I think we're going to be a little bit surprised. Also, their group, I was looking at their group.
In UEFA.
No, this is
the World Cup.
World Cup. So this is their group. Algeria, Argentina, them, and Jordan. Yeah. They could easily beat Jordan. I think they could easily beat Algeria. I think it's going to be between them and Argentina as to who finishes at the top, and it's probably going to be the games against each other. So I think Austria gets out of the group, and I could totally see, based on the way they play, them sneaking another win or two. I could see them being that dark horse that you're like, wait a minute, Austria kind of shocking you out of nowhere.
Sure, sure. I wouldn't be too surprised. What did we say? I think I watched maybe one of their qualifiers or something like that. And they look like a strong team, to say the least. All right.
They're gegenpressing, bro. Ralf Rangnick, Ralf Ball.
We love
all of the Red Bull Red teams. Bull were, yeah, we're built on that. So.
Sure, sure. Is Alaba still playing? Is he making the World Cup?
Yes. We just got a thumbs up.
Okay. Yeah. So, because Ingrid decides who goes to the Austrian team.
We got two thumbs up. That's a pretty good one for me.
All right, let's wrap up right there.
What a show.
What a show. Everybody came through. Stu Holden, Mayor Mamdani. Everybody just wants to get on the Cooligans bandwagon.
Welcome aboard, everybody. It's going to be a lot of Arsenal talk. I hope you guys are ready for it.
That's right. The mayor was like, bro, I need some of that Cooligans clout. We're happy to provide some, bro.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much to Mayor Mamdani and his team for the invitation to the press conference. I mean, it's kind of just a really dope thing to it's 1,000 World Cup tickets that are going to be available to fans in New York. And they're at $50. It would be a lottery to win them. But the fact that that's even happening is because, you know, we're lucky to have a mayor that cares so much about the game, but cares so much about making it accessible, which, you know, while we were there, you be on the lookout. We, you know, Tim Weah was there as well, and Mark McKenzie and stuff like that. But the fact that this is a thing that's, you know, not going away. This, like, it's an issue, and people are trying to find ways to resolve how expensive the World Cup is. So whether that's, you know, the World Cup committee's finding free alternative for fan fests and things like that. Like, everybody's doing everything possible because all the promise sort
not
of...
Not everybody. Gianni Infantino.
I'm just saying, at least the people in the World Cup committees, they're trying to make this, you know, as far as, like, the expectation of the economic... The economic boom that was supposed to sort of come from the World Cup, they're not really seeing that. So everybody has to find ways to, you know, make this you know, just like an enjoyable tournament, because there's plenty of reasons why it wouldn't be.
Well, we want everyone to be able to watch it, and clearly so does Zoran Mamdani, which is great. So thank you, Mayor Mamdani. And jokes aside, Gianni Infantino had to approve of it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He did that. So thank you very much. And thanks to the New York, New Jersey host committee, who, you know, they worked very hard to do that as well. So shouts to them, bro.
You love to see it. Okay. And thank you again. Also, Stu Holden. It was great to catch up with
him.
So cool.
And
he's going to be announcing, you know, several of the matches for Fox at the World Cup. And just another good dude. A day one, even, man. He's been
he's listening to the show.
Remember, I remember he came into the studio where we played FIFA in that 2018.
No, it had to be before that. It was like 2017, dude.
When were we in the studio?
It's like 2017, 2018. And then.
I think it was like 17 to 19 that we
Yeah, because 19 we already went.
We went to a food bell.
Yeah.
But man, it's always great to catch up with Stu. We hadn't spoken to him in a while. So shout out to him. All right. The hot shows do not stop.
You know what? You really I mean, you always say it, but you really mean it now.
Even I'm kind of surprised. So be on the lookout.
Wait to see some of the surprises we got coming for you. It's gonna be amazing.
The next few weeks are gonna be wild. And again, stay locked in for the World Cup, because the Cooligans are gonna be the most fun place, I think, for the World Cup. So we appreciate y'all. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. We'll be back on Monday with a new episode. Y'all the absolute best. Everybody, take care. I hope all your teams lose this weekend. Everton versus Tottenham.
Oh, boy.
It's going to be quite interesting. Monday, our next episode might be a little bit interesting with our producer. Right. We'll see.
Maybe next season we're talking about championship matches. Who knows? Love you guys.